You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 31st of August 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, it seems like the coronavirus is gradually petering out in Britain. There was only one death yesterday in the whole of the United Kingdom. No deaths at all in Scotland, and of course that hasn't stopped Nicola Sturgeon from really milking this for all that she can. She is still giving daily briefings on the coronavirus, even though there was no deaths in Scotland yesterday. She's just come out today saying that all the Scottish pupils have got to be wearing masks. Children from the age of five have got to be wearing masks when they're on the school bus. And she's really, really taking this for everything that she can, this newfound sense of self-importance that she has. And England really isn't that much better. Although they stopped doing the daily briefings, they haven't lifted any lockdown measures for the last 7 weeks. It's just unbelievable. We know more about the virus now. My own suspicion is that the virus is petering out, it's getting weaker and weaker, which we can see by the small numbers of people that are now being hospitalised and the even smaller numbers of people that are actually dying from it. So why are they still coming out with all these restrictions? Well, there was a huge demonstration against this on Saturday that was headed by David Icke, and there were lots of doctors and medical professionals that he had there as well. There was no media coverage of it at all. There was a small piece in the Metro that mentioned it. And they are finally mentioning it today. And the reason why they are mentioning it today is because Jeremy Corbyn's brother Piers has been handed the first £10,000 fine in London for an illegal gathering after he organised a march claiming coronavirus is a hoax. Now, I'm not quite sure they were claiming coronavirus is a hoax. They were marching against the lockdown. They were marching against the false medical information that's being given, this idea that everybody should be wearing masks. The only masks that will actually protect you from it is the FFP3 mask, which they've told people not to wear. And whenever I see people wearing these masks on the television, even the BBC reporters, they're constantly putting their hands up to their face to pull the mask back over their nose where it slips down, because none of them are wearing actual respirators. An actual respirator has a band, two bands, that actually go right the way around the head so that the mask can't slip down and it's secure to the face. The masks that they are selling, the commercially available ones that people are wearing, just have two loops that go over the ears. And of course, that doesn't secure it to the face. So it constantly falls down. People are constantly putting their hands up to the mask to lift it back up over their nose. When they put their hands up to the mask, they pick up all the moisture and whatever germs there are that are on the mask. And that is then on their hands and it goes onto whatever it is that they next touch. And I'm continually seeing journalists doing this. I've seen politicians doing this while at the same time telling everybody that they should be wearing masks. And of course, anybody with any common sense can see that and realize that that's not doing anything at all to help. And in actual fact, it might be doing more harm. Of course, I'm not telling people to break the law here. The law in England is that you have to wear a mask when you go in shops. So you have to wear a mask. What I'm doing is pointing out that I do have sympathies with these people that are protesting against these measures, which they did on Saturday. According to the Mail, the 73-year-old meteorologist, that's Piers Corbyn, led more than 10,000 anti-lockdown protesters who believe coronavirus is a hoax at the Unite for Freedom rally in Trafalgar Square on Saturday. And again, we have a contradiction here, because the tweet that Piers Corbyn sent out says that there were 35,000 protesters in Trafalgar Square. And I'm guessing that he gets that 35,000 from the size of Trafalgar Square and knowing that the capacity for the square must be 35,000 people. That is a huge number of people at a protest to just be ignored by the BBC. Apparently there were 35,000 people at the Berlin protest in Germany, which they did cover. And of course they are covering the protests that went on in Belarus, which probably had a lot less people. They're devoting a lot of time to that, but they have devoted no time whatsoever to this protest in London. David Icke was, as I say, was the main speaker. I watched his speech, and within the first few seconds, he had identified the oppressive force behind all of this as fascism. Now, I know that David Icke is just the first stop on the truth train. The last stop is probably Christian Identity, and shortly before that you get World War II truth. But the first stop on the truth train is David Icke. But he's been doing this now for must be 20 years, maybe 30 years that David Icke has been doing this. And the idea that he hasn't managed to work out that the force behind all of this is actually communism, or closer to communism than it is to fascism, it's just unbelievable. You would think that the man would have some integrity. I guess what he's trying to do is play to the crowd, because he knows that fascism, the word fascist, is used all the time in the media. It's used all the time by the left-wing media to attack anybody that they want to attack. So the word itself has become a bit of a hate word, something to call people that you don't like. But you would at least think that he would try to be accurate when he's on a platform with medical professionals and doctors, because to call what we are facing today fascism is just inexcusable. There was an old boy there with a British Union of Fascists flag. Good on him for showing the flag. And of course, that's been picked up on, and a lot of leftists have been saying, well, this was a fascist protest. I've seen them doing this before. Just because somebody at a uniting protest might have some nationalist symbol, they will try and say that the whole protest were National Socialist or they were neo-Nazi, just because there was one person there with a flag. And that doesn't mean that everybody there shares the same ideology. There's a website called altnews.net, and they did an attack piece on Mark Cullett the other week. And they put out a tweet attacking this old boy with this flag, with this Union of Fascists flag. And you just think, this website, AltNewsNet, is supposed to be a civic nationalist site. It's supposed to be an alternative site. So why is it attacking symbols of British nationalism from before the 70s? Because the British Union of Fascists was British nationalism. There weren't any other nationalist groups to speak of. The other nationalist groups that there were to speak of were more hardcore fascists than Oswald Mosley's fascist organization. Anybody that is attacking the British Union of Fascists, you have to really question where their loyalties lie if they are claiming to be nationalists, because that was nationalism right up until the 70s, when you had the National Front and the BNP. So it's sad to see websites that call themselves alternative, that claim to be on the right side of politics, and they do things like that. And obviously this wasn't representative of this protest in any way, because you've got David Icke blaming fascists somehow for what we are facing today. The fascist states, or the fascist organisations, and I'm not just including Italy in this. I would say that National Socialism was a form of fascism. The Iron Guard were a form of fascism. The Falange were a form of fascism. All these organizations were defeated at the end of the Second World War, with the exception of in Spain, which actually didn't take part in the Second World War. But all these organizations, these governments, these groups, they haven't existed for 70 years. So to be calling people Nazis, calling them fascists, it's just ridiculous. It just shows that the people that are throwing these trigger words around have no idea what the meaning of the words actually are. I mean, when you think about fascism, I wouldn't even link it directly to Benito Mussolini or Adolf Hitler's National Socialism. I would say fascism comes from the fasci, the symbol itself, which has been around for thousands of years. It was a symbol that the Roman Empire used. It's a symbol that's used in the American Congress because it was always seen as a positive thing. And it means everybody working together. It means people all of the same particular type, the same ethnic group working together. And when we all work together, the sum of us working together is greater than the individual parts. So you put all the twigs together, make the strength of a solid oak handle that you could use for an axe. That's what the fasci is, and that's what fascism is. It's the perfect symbol for ethno-nationalism. It's not something that should be seen as a bad thing. Why should it be seen as a bad thing? Everybody working together for the good of the whole, rather than working for the good of the individual. No man is an island. We all rely on the people around us, and fascism is the perfect political form of that. That's the way that I would describe fascism anyway. I would always go back to the original fasci, which is where the word comes from. Mr. Corbyn, the older brother of the former Labour leader, was seen being hauled off by officers after the event, and his Twitter account has since confirmed he was slapped with the colossal fine and held for 10 hours. And of course he's going to appeal this, because we do have the right to protest. It will be interesting to see what happens in the courts with this, because we have a constitutional right to protest, and in order to suspend the Constitution, I think they have to bring in the Insurrection Act. They have to bring in the extraordinary powers that the government have to suspend all our constitutional rights, and that's the only way that they can do that. I'm not sure that the coronavirus legislation would actually stand up in court. That's if you have honest judges and you don't have political judges, because of course, don't forget, in our Supreme Court in Britain, we do have political judges whose political views take precedence over their legal views, as we saw when they tried to put a stop to Brexit and then boasted about doing it. The feminist judge boasted about doing it so that she could stop Brexit, basically. Not because of what Boris Johnson was doing was in any way illegal, proroguing Parliament for more than one reason. Everybody prorogues Parliament for more than one reason. If you can kill more than one bird with more than two birds with one stone, then that's what you want to do. You want to make the most use of your time and the best use of your political moves. But I'm getting a little bit off topic here now. There was another protest on Saturday in London, and this was called the Million Person March. So there were supposed to be a million people marching on Sunday. And who was it that was supposed to be at this march? Black Lives Matter. Unfortunately for them, only around 300 people turned up. 300 Black Lives Matter protesters marched through the streets of London and blocked traffic outside Notting Hill tube station by lying down in the road. Quite what they are supposed to be protesting there, I don't know. Are they protesting the environment, climate change, the speed of vehicles? Who knows? The Million People March is protesting against systemic racism and is taking place in lieu of this year's Notting Hill Carnival. The Notting Hill Carnival is going to be taking place online, and I am guessing that it's going to be the first year ever that they don't actually have any stabbings. at the Notting Hill Carnival. Protesters chanted "Whose streets, our streets," and "This is what democracy looks like," and held placards as they began moving down to Hyde Park. What it actually looked like is a crowd of about 90% whites, white women, and about 10% blacks. It must be quite embarrassing for the white women that turn up there to see that actually there really aren't many black people that actually support this movement, because they're just proxies for the corporations and the communists and the people that want to take down the patriarchy and take down white civilization and replace it with bland consumers with no national identity. That's what this is all about. Thankfully, we haven't got the same problems over here in Britain that we're seeing over in America with Black Lives Matter. And we shouldn't forget that all of this is, all that they are protesting about is based on a black criminal overdosing on fentanyl, which is still being reported as a black man killed by racist police by the mainstream media over here in Britain, even though it's been exposed that he died of a drug overdose. The other recent killing that we had by the police of a black man, he had a knife in his hand. He had just been fighting with the police. The police had tasered him. They were trying to arrest him. And he walked off to his car and then tried to get in his glove box, which is obviously where you would be keeping a weapon in America. So the police emptied some lead into him to neutralize him. Once again, he's being held up as a hero, and we've got more protests, we've got more riots, we've got more looting. We've now got a dead right-wing protester over there in America, and the mainstream media over here is portraying this as somehow being Trump's fault, that there were counter-protesters that went into Portland trying to cause trouble, and they were macing the protesters, and somehow at the end of it, one person died. And you contrast that with the way that they were portraying Kyle Rittenhouse, or whatever his surname was, that ended up having to fire his weapon in self-defense and ended up killing two Antifa that they're portraying as a murderer and some kind of white supremacist terrorist. It's interesting the way you can contrast this, the way that the mainstream media values the lives of these degenerates far more than it values the life of what they're calling a right-wing protester. Because he was a member of Patriot Prayer, because he was a supporter of Blue Lives Matter, because he was a supporter of Trump. Apparently on the video, you can hear somebody saying, "There's one over there, there's a Trumper over there." And then you hear the sound of shots being fired out. And of course, let us remember that we've been warning that this is what was going to happen for years now, since before even Trump's inauguration. Since the Ferguson riots, we've been warning that they're going to come to the suburbs and they're going to be coming directly for white people eventually. Then we had Trump's inauguration, where Antifa rioted, set fire to things, and they were all led off. And we pointed out that if something wasn't done to stop this, this is just going to get bigger and bigger, and there's going to be people that end up being murdered. And I've lost count now of the number of people that have been murdered since the 90 days of riots and looting began at the death of George Floyd. It does look as if it's benefiting Donald Trump, though, because his ratings are going up all the time, and the support for Black Lives Matter is going down all the time. This strategy of Joe Biden of pledging support for the protesters and support for Black Lives Matter is really backfiring, and it's going to backfire on the politicians that supported it in Britain as well. It's a great shame that these protesters are now taking guns out with them. If you're taking a gun out with you, then the likelihood is you are going to use it. And if one side is going to take guns out with them, then the other side are going to take guns out with them. And sadly, you're going to end up with people getting shot. I think it would be far better for the nationalist types, the people that are on the right, just to stay at home, protect their families, and just allow Black Lives Matter to loot, rob, and pillage and expose themselves to the world for what they are, just lawless thugs. Don't interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. I think it's the same the same policy that we were promoting when people in Britain were suggesting to go and protect the monuments from Black Lives Matter. And the narrative changed completely to evil far-right white supremacists fighting the police. When Black Lives Matter are torching the city and destroying the city, that there's no better propaganda for us in the pro-white sphere than for the general mainstream population to see the left wing behaving in this way. That really is the best propaganda that we can have. It really does wake people up. But this march over here in London, this was obviously a damp squib, but they certainly didn't get the numbers that they thought they were going to get. They didn't even get 1% of the numbers that they thought they were going to get, which really shows you the lack of support that there is for Black Lives Matter in Britain now. Also, with this censorship of Royal Britannia and Land of Hope and Glory, there's been a massive backlash against that. So things are looking quite positive as far as white people waking up are concerned. But I just want to move over to Scotland for a final article that I want to get into today. And this is to do with Scotland's hate crime bill that I've spoken about before. A leading atheist in Scotland has hailed the SNP's proposed hate crime bill as an opportunity to target Christians for prosecution. And of course, this is what lots of people have been saying, not just nationalists, but also libertarians have been pointing out that this hate crime bill takes away the necessity to actually prove an intent to incite hate. So anybody could just point to anything that anybody has said and say, well, that's inciting hate, even if the person has got nothing but love in their heart. And we can see that here with atheists saying, we're going to use this bill to target Christians. The left separatist Scottish National Party administration's proposed hate crime and public order bill is set to criminalise speech that is likely to stir up hatred against supposedly marginalised groups. As written, the law would not require police or prosecutors to demonstrate any malicious intent behind the statements. I mean, this is really chilling. It means that you would not be able to make jokes even about supposedly marginalised groups or religions. In light of the sweeping new powers to police speech, the convener of Atheists Scotland, Ian Stewart, wrote in the Dundee newspaper The Courier, "Atheists see some merit in Justice Secretary Humza Yousaf's hate crime bill, as it will enable the prosecution of all Scotland's religions and their holy books for spreading hatred." I wonder if they include the Talmud in that. I bet they don't. "It is utterly unacceptable that in progressive, social democratic Scotland, that squalid Bronze Age village disputes as described in the holy books about control of women, goats or water should give Scotland's holy willies authority to spout out vitriol against atheists, agnostics, apostates, sceptics, non-believers, women, trans people and homosexuals," he declared. Well, I wonder if he realises that his belief system of atheism was actually given to him by atheistic Jews in the first place. I bet he hasn't bothered to actually look into that because, of course, his main attack will be Christianity. Most of the atheists haven't even got the courage to criticise Islam. It's always attacking Christianity here, and I think we can see that from his list of people that he thinks these religions somehow target. Stewart said that his group intends to monitor all holy books, sermons in places of worship, and the social media accounts of the various religions, and will report any supposed offenders to Police Scotland to be criminally prosecuted. I mean, how can they say that this law is to prevent people from targeting minorities, when if this law comes into being, it will enable atheists to target Christians? The best way to deal with all of this is just to have freedom of speech and make it illegal to incite violence, which is the way that it's always been in Britain before we decided that we were going to take away the responsibility for people's actions and start prosecuting people for a supposed incitement to hate. if you're going to prosecute people for saying something that somebody else then carries out, you're basically taking away the responsibility for the person that, that carried out the crime. And that's what all of our justice system is based upon, holding people accountable for their actions. And if you're going to prosecute people, not the person that carried out the actions, but you're going to prosecute somebody else for what they have said, then it takes away that responsibility. It says that none of us are actually responsible for our own actions. And we should be responsible for our own actions, and we should be taught to have self-discipline. We should be taught to be unincitable. I don't think there is an actual word, incitable, but there should be, because we should all be taught to be unincitable. We should be taught to have self-discipline, to have control over our emotions, and to be responsible for our actions. In response to the atheist's letter, the Deputy Director for Public Affairs at the Christian Institute, Simon Calvert, said that the loose language of the hate crime bill will give politically motivated complainants like Mr. Stewart a powerful weapon against their ideological opponents. And this is just it. It just hands over the ability to use the weight of the law against your political opponents. That's what it does. It gives this ability to the left, to the progressives, and silences their opponents. Why do they wish to silence their opponents? Because they're not able to debate us, because we are on the side of the truth and they are on the side of lies. The threshold of the proposed offences is so low that Mr. Stewart might well be able to persuade a police officer that certain unfashionable Bible verses or sermons are hate crimes. Does the Scottish Government really want to expose church ministers to the risk of prosecution at the instigation of anti-religious zealots? Calvert questioned. And I have to point out here that when you go into court, when you're asked to swear an oath to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, you actually swear that oath upon a Bible. And they're going to say now that if you actually believe what the Bible says, you can be prosecuted. You can be prosecuted for pointing out that you believe that what it says in the Bible is true. And then that's going to be a hate crime. Surely not. Surely they can see the inconsistency in having people swear to tell the truth on the Bible and then prosecuting them for actually reading the Bible. A former moderator of the Free Church of Scotland, Reverend David Robertson, said that Stewart's threatening letter illustrates perfectly why more limitations on freedom of speech should not be codified into law. Robertson said that in his letter, Stewart is, in effect, saying that we should all be closed down unless we accept his authoritarian morality, adding that the atheist regards any disagreements with any of his fundamental beliefs as self-evident hate. And of course, that is the sensible view. That is the view that most people have. But that's not the view of these progressives. It's not the view of these politicians that have been trying to get this bill pushed through. A lot of these advocacy groups, a lot of these minority advocacy groups are really cheering this bill on as well, because it means that it silences the opposition. It means that there will be no more opposition in Scotland. And it's just the same as they had in the USSR, where anybody that criticised communism would be sent to jail. They would be told that they were insane. They would have these show trials for daring to criticise the Soviet system. And that's what you would have here. People that were criticising the promotion of homosexuality, criticising the promotion of divorce, criticising gay marriage, all those sorts of things. They would just define them as hate and then lock people up for having that opinion. It's basically saying the only opinion that you can have is the official one given to you by the government. And that is the definition of a tyranny, isn't it? In July, a group of Roman Catholic bishops warned that the hate crime bill could criminalise tenets of their faith, such as the belief that sex and gender are not fluid and changeable. So even just reading out the beginning of Genesis, where man is created male and female, even that could then be charged as a hate crime. They went on to warn that the provision in the bill that prohibits the possession of offensive content could even criminalise the possession of the Bible. So we could end up taking the courts of justice to court for breaking the law, for having Bibles in them, and for saying that people have to swear on this Bible, because the Bible will then be a piece of contraband, won't it? It will be a book full of offensive content, a hate crime in itself. This is how far we've fallen. The very book that our justice system is built upon swearing oaths upon, we are now saying is a hate crime in itself. Allowing for respectful debate means avoiding censorship and accepting the divergent views and multitude of arguments inhabiting society, said Anthony Horan, the director of the Catholic Parliamentary Office. Once again, the voice of common sense is coming from the Christian side, the side that is supposedly in rebellion. I mean, it's just incredible to have thought 30 years ago or 40 years ago that the rebels in 2020 would be the Christians and the people that wish to hold to traditional values, and they were the ones that were going to be targeted as being anti-establishment. You just wouldn't have believed it. Nobody would have believed the rapid descent that we have had into degeneracy, just how fast it has come, and just how little reaction against it there has been. I'm just grateful that there is a wide-scale rejection of this bill that crosses various different groups and different sections of society, and hopefully common sense will win in the end. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.